We're continuing Chapter 4 of Emma. They met Mr. Martin the very next day as they were walking on the Donwell Road. He was on foot, and after looking very respectfully at her, looked with most unfeigned satisfaction at her companion. Emma was not sorry to have such an opportunity of survey, and walking a few yards forward while they talked together, they soon made her quick eye sufficiently acquainted with Mr. Robert Martin. His appearance was very neat, and he looked like a sensible young man, but his person had no other advantage, and when he came to be contrasted with a gentleman, she thought he must lose all ground he had gained in Harriet's inclination. Harriet was not insensible of manner. She had voluntarily noticed her father's gentleness with admiration as well as wonder. Mr. Martin looked as if he did not know what manner was. They remained but a few minutes together, as Miss Woodhouse must not be kept waiting, and Harriet then came running to her with a smiling face and in a flutter of spirits, which Miss Woodhouse hoped very soon to compose. "Only think of our happening to meet him. How very odd. It was quite a chance," he said, "that he had not gone round by Randall's. He did not think we ever walked this road. He thought we walked toward Randall's most days. He has not been able to get the romance of the forest yet. He was so busy the last time he was at Kingston that he quite forgot it. But he goes again tomorrow. So very odd we should happen to meet. Well, Miss Woodhouse, is he like what you expected? What do you think of him? Do you think him so very plain?" "He is very plain, undoubtedly. Remarkably plain. But that is nothing compared with his entire want of gentility. I had no right to expect much, and I did not expect much. But I had no idea that he could be so very clownish, so totally without air. I had imagined him, I confess, a degree or two nearer gentility." "To be sure," said Harriet, in a mortified voice, "he is not so genteel as real gentlemen. I think, Harriet, since your acquaintance with us, you have been repeatedly in the company of some such very real gentlemen, that you must yourself be struck with the difference in Mr. Martin. At Hartfield, you have had very good specimens of well-educated, well-bred men. I should be surprised if, after seeing them, you could be in the company with Mr. Martin again without perceiving him to be a very inferior creature, and rather wondering at yourself for ever having thought him at all agreeable before. Do you not begin to feel that now? Were you not struck? I am sure you must have been struck by his awkward look and abrupt manner, and the uncouthness of a voice, which I heard to be wholly unmodulated as I stood here." "Certainly, he is not like Mr. Knightley. He has not such a fine air and way of walking as Mr. Knightley. I see the difference plain enough. But Mr. Knightley is so very fine a man." "Mr. Knightley's air is remarkably good, that it is not fair to compare Mr. Martin to him. You might not see one in 100 with gentlemen so plainly written as in Mr. Knightley. But he is not the only gentleman you have been lately used to. What say you to Mr. Weston and Mr. Elton? Compare Mr. Martin with either of them. Compare their manner of carrying themselves, of walking, of speaking, of being silent. You must see the difference." "Oh, yes, there is a great difference. But Mr. Weston is almost an old man. Mr. Weston must be between 40 and 50. Which makes his good manners the more valuable. The older a person grows, Harriet, the more important it is that their manners should not be bad, the more glaring and disgusting any loudness or coarseness or awkwardness becomes. What is passable in youth is detestable in later age. Mr. Martin is now awkward and abrupt. What will he be at Mr. Weston's time of life?" "There is no saying, indeed," replied Harriet, rather solemnly. "But there may be good guessing. He will be a completely gross, vulgar farmer, totally inattentive to appearances and thinking of nothing but profit and loss." "Will he, indeed? That will be very bad. How much his business engrosses him already is very plain from the circumstances of his forgetting to inquire for the book you recommended. He was a great deal too full of the market to think of anything else, which is just as it should be for a thriving man. What has he to do with books? And I have no doubt that he will thrive, and be a very rich man in time, and his being illiterate and coarse need not disturb us. I wonder he did not remember the book, was all Harriet's answer, and spoken with a degree of grave displeasure, which Emma thought might be safely left to itself. She, therefore, said no more for some time. Her next beginning was, in one respect, perhaps, Mr. Elton's manner are superior to Mr. Knightley's and Mr. Weston's. They have more gentleness. They might be more safely held up as a pattern. There is an openness, a quickness, almost a bluntness in Mr. Weston, which everybody likes in him, because there is so much good humor with it. But that would not be not do to be copied. Neither would Mr. Knightley's downright, decided, commanding sort of manner, though it suits him very well. His figure and look and situation in life seem to allow it. But if any young man were to set about copying him, he would not be sufferable. On the contrary, I think a young man might be very safely recommended to take Mr. Elton as a model. Mr. Elton is a good-humored, cheerful, obliging, and gentle. He seems to me to be grown particularly gentle of late. I do not know whether he has any design of ingratiating himself with either of us, Harriet, by additional softness, but it strikes me that his manners are softer than they used to be. If he means anything, it must be to please you. Did I not tell you what he said of you the other day? She then repeated some warm personal praise which she had drawn from Mr. Elton, and she now did full justice to, and Harriet blushed and smiled and said she had always thought Mr. Elton very agreeable. Mr. Elton was the very person fixed on by Emma for driving the young farmer out of Harriet's head. She thought it would be an excellent match, and only too palpably desirable, natural, and probable for her to have much merit in planning it. She feared it was what everybody else must think of and predict. It was not likely, however, that anybody should have equaled her in the date of the plan, as it had entered her brain during the very first evening of Harriet's coming to Hartfield. The longer she considered it, the greater was her sense of its expediency. Mr. Elton's situation was most suitable, quite the gentleman himself, and without low connections. At the same time, not of any family that could fairly object to the doubtful birth of Harriet. He had a comfortable home for her, and Emma imagined a very sufficient income, for, though the vicarage of Highbury was not large, he was known to have some independent property, and she thought very highly of him as a good-humored, well-meaning, respectable young man, without any deficiency of useful understanding or knowledge of the world. She had already satisfied herself that he thought Harriet a beautiful girl, which she trusted with such frequent meetings at Hartfield, was foundation enough on his side, and on Harriet's could be little doubt that the idea of being preferred by him would have all the usual weight and efficacy. And he really was a very pleasing young man, a young man whom any woman not fastidious might like. He was reckoned very handsome, his person much admired in general, though not by her, there being a want of elegance of feature which she could not dispense with, but the girl who could be gratified by Robert Martin's riding about the country to get walnuts for her might very well be conquered by Mr. Elton's admiration. And that's the end of chapter 4. And we'll read the next one. First we'll say goodnight to the kitten who's listening to this later. Goodnight, my beautiful love. Sweet dreams. I love you so much.